Hello everyone and welcome to Starscream's Ghost, a Transformers podcast, your episode-by-episode podcast guide through the classic Transformers Generation 1 cartoon and now Japanese anime continuity. I am Jeremy Graves and joining me as per usual, my good friend in crime as we continue to see Daniel just suffer more trauma as this series goes on. It is of course Mr. Andy Hanley. Good sir, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. I'm primed to hide my weak spot for the entirety of this podcast.
Fair play, mate, fair play. If you are a first-time listener to the podcast, thank you very much for giving us a chance. We hope you enjoy it. Whether you found us in audio-only form through the likes of Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or if you're watching the video version on YouTube, of which if you are, hi YouTube, how are you doing? If you want to find our social media channels, we are at StarscreamsPod on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find our YouTube channel by searching for Starscream's Ghost Podcast. In terms of the episodes we are discussing today, everyone, it is going to be episodes 21 and 22 of the Japanese Transformers Headmasters series, of which, as we like to note here, we are watching the UK DVD version when it comes to the translation of subtitles and such. If you're watching the video version, you can see that set right there behind me. But of course, you can also find the episodes in their entirety on YouTube should you want to follow along. Andy, before we get going into the episodes proper this time, any general thoughts you want to share regarding these episodes, almost as like a primer for those listening?
As I alluded to at the start, like we find out Scorponok's weak spot. I don't think we were supposed to, but we did. We'll talk about why later. These were actually kind of good episodes in a way. Like, they are still a little bit sort of monster of the weeky, like we're still planet hopping. But there is a sense of importance to some of the stuff happening here that is clearly setting up for what's going to happen later on. And I think that's kind of what these episodes do well, is that they manage to split the difference of being one-off episodes, but they also plant just enough seeds of the broader storyline to be like, okay, like I feel like there's been some important plot progression. The other thing to note here is that both these episodes are kind of brutal. Like, I feel like a lot of people die in these episodes. Like, even if they're not explicitly all shown on camera, like, there's a lot of really kind of brutal assaults on alien races, etc. That is another reminder that this is not your dad's Transformers, where, like, you know, nobody ever got hurt, really. Like, this gets kind of wild.
Yeah, now you mention it, you're not wrong, actually. And that is one thing we have seen throughout the progression of this series, is that, quite frankly, it's just more violent, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Just in general. Which is, you know, weird way to put it, but it's kind of pleasant to see that Transformers is growing up in that sense.
Yeah. And I mean, again, we've sort of talked before, it's that typical kind of Japanese attitude towards this kind of stuff, where it's not quite as conservative when it comes to kids' TV as the West. I am worried that the Battle Beasts are going extinct, though.
Yeah, they get involved again, everyone, like in a very minor way, but in an importantly minor way. So expect potentially more Battle Beast talk as we go along. But with that being said, I think it's time we advance to our first episode of the show. Let's move on to episode 21, Find Scorponok's Weak Spot. We begin actually in the throes of action, because Wheelie and RC are running away from the Decepticon headmasters. They're chasing them down, but then RC trips over a rock, and this brings the chase to a complete stop. Skullcruncher saying, "You can't escape us," and Weird Wolf following up with, "Autobot is my favourite dish." Great line. Then, when all is seemingly lost and they're about to be killed by the headmasters, who shows up in front of a literal spotlight wearing a cowboy hat but Daniel?
Yeah, this is where my first note for this episode is just all caps. What is going on?
So Daniel then suddenly is holding a handgun, and he starts firing the gun and literally is blowing up the headmasters. The Decepticon headmasters, obviously. And part of me is thinking, is this going to be one of those episodes where we start, like, near the end of the episode, we find out how Daniel acquires some special powers, and we find out he's actually just killed two of the main antagonists of the show in this episode? This is what I'm thinking. But no. Because then we suddenly hear RC in a very cool, calm, and collected and relaxed way just say, very skillful. And then we cut back to Daniel, who just starts going, well, you know. And this is followed up with Wheely basically putting down Daniel's ability and saying, highbrow program this so anyone can hit the target. And this is when we find out he's playing a video game. He's kind of playing, I don't know, if you're in an arcade, think like House of the Dead or Time Crisis, or if you want to go really old school, probably at this point, Duck Hunt on the NES, something like that. And this actually harkens back to something that we've previously discussed, Andy, because I think it was a few podcasts ago, when in one of the TF Wiki notes, we discussed how the introduction sequence to the show was changed slightly so that Decepticon characters were flashing, so it worked with the flashing light gun game that you could use on the TV.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I believe when it was referenced that Daniel at some point will use it actually in the show, this is that game that they are talking about. So we actually have literally got some really fun mixed media stuff going on now.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised that, yeah, like, you know, Wheely didn't turn to camera to be like, available now, you know, go full commercial on it. I do wonder, like, actually in Japan, like, I wonder whether they did match it up to, like, run a commercial for it in the break or something, because it does feel like this should all mesh together. Like, maybe this is just my marketing brain kind of popping off of just like, well, if you're doing this, then you should really go all in on it.
I'd be very surprised if they didn't, but I'm going to imagine there's no Japanese recording of the TV broadcast at this
probably.
Point.
Probably not, but yeah, also, again, like, Wheely, what a jerk.
Well, this is, you know, he gets a bit of karma, that's the word I'm thinking of, because this then leads everything that's been going on to what the TF Wiki aptly described as sort of like a William Tell-style challenge, in that Wheely is holding a ball in his fingers. And all Daniel has to do is shoot the ball. And instead, he shoots Wheely's arm. And my immediate thought when this happened was, oh no.
Yeah, I mean, my second note for this episode was, at least Wheely got shot.
So that's the opening scenes of the episode, everybody. So at this point, we've got no flipping idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I will say, like, I do love this kind of thing. I'm a big fan of the episode that starts in, like, video game or some kind of, like, you know, alternative world, and you're like, what the heck is going on? And then it kind of pulls back the curtain, like, oh no, they were just playing a game, or they were just goofing around or whatever. Like, always here for that, and it was quite entertaining.
Then the narrator says, quote-unquote, the Decepticons have been attempting to plunder other planets' energy, but Fortress Maximus is tracking them through space. Excuse me. We see that the battleship is flying through space as the narrator is saying this. We then go inside to the bridge, specifically. Despite what the narrator has said, it becomes very clear, very quickly through dialogue, that the headmasters have lost track of Scorponok. So, someone didn't clue the narrator in here on what to say.
No, again, I mean, recurring theme of this series and these episodes is the Autobots being kind of bad at their jobs. Mm. Like, there's a lot of kind of goofs across these episodes particularly, where you're just like, guys, you kind of need to step it up a bit. Like, you know, the universe is potentially in peril and going to fall apart, and you're just kind of, like, dropping things off of your spaceship, basically.
But then they detect an SOS signal, which is emanating from coordinates XY-1014, which Fortress says is planet Darhos. Now, we need to clarify here something. We need to clarify something here, I should say, Andy. Because per the TF Wiki, because I saw Darhos, which was spelt D-A-R-H-O-S on the subtitle, and I immediately thought, haven't we been there before? And I went on the TF Wiki and looked it up, and this was actually a mistranslation. It was meant to be Darhos, without the H, because otherwise that means we're going back to the planet where we actually saw Fortress Maximus for the first time.
It's totally understandable why you'd make that translation error. Two, it's really weird that they picked two planets with such similar names. They must have been struggling, like, oh, I just can't think of any planet names. Like, I'll just use one of the other ones and remove a character from it. It'll be fine. No one will notice.
Yeah, so we did not jump back to episode 13. But a little sidebar here, Andy, because our experience of watching this episode on the DVD and whatnot, it went a bit loopy. And this is just to kind of set the scene for people, because Andy has already alluded to the fact that we kind of already know something that we're not really meant to know yet. And that's because during this episode on the DVD, random subtitles are just appearing in between bits of dialogue. Funny enough, they never actually cross over dialogue, but it's literally episode, it's actually subtitles from what seems to be, Andy, a future episode, and later on, it literally gives away a crucial plot point, one of these subtitles.
Because when that particular moment happened, I thought, like, oh, maybe these are just, like, subs from, like, later in the episode that got, like, mistimed or something, but no, they're from a completely different episode. Like, there is one hilarious moment, like, later on where, like, you know, a character says nothing, but the subtitle is basically like, I'm gonna kill you or something.
Yes.
And it's just, like, it's really perfectly timed, and it's just like, oh, wow, this is actually kind of great.
It's almost like an internal monologue at that point.
Yeah.
So yeah, so if at any point some of the notes maybe come across as a tad random or something, that might be why, just to forewarn people. So we now know that the Decepticons, excuse me, are going to be on planet Daros. So we're now fast forwarding to there, specifically to the planet's northern hemisphere, which, according to the narrator, specifically is where the SOS originated from. Despite the planet looking desolate and there being no trace of energy, which begs the question, why are the Decepticons here then? The Autobots travel through the icy landscape that we see, driving through a ravine, Andy, which I feel like we've seen since like season two at this point.
Yeah, no, I feel like we've had one ravine in the Headmasters because I felt very nostalgic all of a sudden. But yes, we have definitely, like, the ravine count has been shockingly low for Headmasters.
The Autobots eventually trace the signal to a factory that the narrator highlights is under construction. But suddenly, there's an explosion. Cue some obligatory transformation sequences that mean we get to see a couple of the tech specs on the Autobot Headmasters, and then we see that the Decepticon Headmasters are literally playing target practice with a bunch of humans, or I'll just say humanoids, because they might not be for all we know. And they're literally just outright murdering them, Andy. There's no way to sugarcoat this. One is literally shot in the back of the head, and they cut the camera away just as that laser hits the back of their cranium.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that felt like the most kind of violent of all of the things we've seen. Like, it's a lot of it is a bit more sort of general, kind of like big explosions in the vicinity where you're just like, well, that would have killed people. But this one, yeah, this is just a kind of horrific, yeah, like execution, for want of a better phrase. And it's just like, oh man, all right, we're serious business here.
Now the Autobots are telling them, quite obviously, like, stop this, stop what you're doing. And this prompts the following dialogue exchange involving Autobots and Decepticons. Chrome Dome, what have they done? The Decepticon Mind Wipe responds with, they were prisoners. Chrome Dome, prisoners? And then Mind Wipe responds with, didn't you know this was a penal colony? Chrome Dome then just says, but even prisoners? And Mind Wipe just cuts him off and says, silence! It's done. And Weird Wolf adds, shall we give them the death penalty too? This, of course, does not sit well with the Autobots, who then just attack the Decepticons. But when I say attack, Andy, this wasn't just like an attack because they're defending things. They were angry. There was a notable amount, a lot more force, I'll say, being used in every single punch that they're throwing on their counterparts. They're proper chasing them down. There's definitely a much more violent side compared to what we've seen in the Autobots in the past, even in some of the ridiculous moments we've already seen in this Headmaster series. This was one of the more violent sides of the Autobot Headmasters that we have seen. They're then chasing down the Decepticons, and they sort of get into, I'll say, like, deeper into the factory complex, and they lose sight of them. They're searching for their enemies, and then the Autobots happen upon a group of three prisoners. We then find out from the narrator that the Autobots are trying to get answers from them about a variety of things, but these prisoners aren't saying anything. The narrator implies that their spirits have been crushed due to all the hard labour they have had to endure. But there was one question that they answered, and this is in relation to who sent out the SOS signal. And it was explained that a beast former, aka a battle beast, named Techna, was responsible for sending the SOS. We'll come back to the rest of the scene in a minute. But Andy, I've talked a lot there, and again, a lot of violence that we've seen here, but the way this story is progressing and such, I'm really liking it. really.
Yeah, yeah, like it has a good attitude to it. I mean, again, like just we're at a penal colony. That's not happened before in Transformers. I feel like we've not really had much dealings with this kind of thing. Yeah, like the kind of summary execution of said prisoners by the Decepticons, the Autobot response being, like you say, a very kind of viscerally angry one, and not just like, it's time to fight. It's pretty punchy. It's rather convenient the prisoners will only answer the question that is plot important. that aside, yeah, like it's a good interesting start, and you know, it sets up a few interesting things and, you know, potentially a few dilemmas as we will see.
So the three prisoners are brought to Battleship Maximus via the train bots to recuperate. Of course, though, this is where we get our next moment of Daniel and Wheelie based hijinks. And boy, is this hijinks. Wheelie wants to spy on the prisoners. He's trying to look through a crack in the door. But Daniel is urging him to not do this, effectively going, Wheelie, just let him rest. Like, what the heck are you doing? But then Wheelie's had enough of Daniel, shoves him out the way, who shoves him then into the door switch. Of course, the door then magically opens. There's, you know, sort of a bit of confusion, but then the prisoners have a moment of ease because they realise there's another human on board. And obviously a child, more to the point as well. So they're kind of just completely caught off guard by this. And the lead prisoner, identified by the TF Wiki per the dialogue script as Curl, C-U-R-L, make of that what you will for a name, is saying, oh, you know, we should become friends. And I'm thinking, okay, where's this going to go? And I should have seen it coming, because he then just immediately grabs Daniel by the throat, pulls out a pocket knife, and holds the knife to his throat. And just starts going, I demand to talk to Fortress.
Who here has not dreamed of doing this? I mean, let's be honest. Who among us?
So the conversation with Fortress unfolds as follows. Fortress on the comms, on the bridge, by the way, with RC and Wheelie in a bit of a panic, because, you know, he caused this. Surprise, surprise. Fortress says over the speaker, this is Fortress. You wish to talk with me? Curl responds with, I don't know what voice I'm going to do now. I'm just going to pick one at random, Andy. There's something I want. A request, responds Fortress. I want this ship. Fortress responds, the ship? Wheelie then comes in and says, who the hell? And RC jumps in and goes, Wheelie, hush. If you refuse, he dies. Fortress responds with, wait, what do you intend to do with this ship? And Curl responds with, kill the ones who imprisoned us.
I just want to say right now, I'm really looking forward to the live action version of this episode where Carl Urban plays the prisoner. that's all I can see in my head now is Carl Urban doing this.
Judge Dredd makes an appearance, make of that what you will. So the conversation continues, and the prisoners make it clear that they want to go to the southern hemisphere of the planet. Fortress is stalling for time by kind of implying a lot of things, but also saying, well, look, I can't fly the ship on my own. I need my comrades, i.e. the headmasters. Can we wait until they're back? But Daniel has now figured out that Fortress is stalling for time, and he's trying to figure out a way of getting away. But then the prisoners notice that Daniel's got a gun. And he tells them, look, it's only a toy. It can't do anything. And they throw the gun down. And I thought, that's going to be expensive to fix. And then Daniel has an epiphany, Andy. Because when all is lost, when you're being held sort of by the throat and the guy's got a knife to you, what's the way you get out of trouble? You bite his arm. He does so. He then dives out of the way of the three prisoners. He grabs the gun. He flicks a switch on said gun. He shoots the gun, and a giant beam of light appears from it, blinding them momentarily. And then Fortress turns into head mode, as it were, which of course is to operate Battleship Maximus, and then he somehow sends a paralysis ray through the speaker that he was talking to the prisoners on. Not going to question it. That's just what happened.
Yeah, let's not ask why he didn't just do that at the start of this entire thing, rather than saying, no, let's just see if Daniel can escape this knife-wielding maniac on his own. What could possibly go wrong?
So with their advantage lost, the prisoner trio explained the reasons for their actions, which it turns out is not what you expect. In the past, the wealth of the energy-rich southern hemisphere of Daros was shared amongst all of its inhabitants. Everyone lived on the planet in peace until an elite group seized power and monopolized control of the planet's resources. As a result of this, they started treating many people, including themselves, the prisoners, just as worthless, and they were just all poverty-stricken and whatnot. The lead prisoner, Curl, was in charge of a failed rebellion against this corrupt ruling class, and as a result of that, was consigned to the prison camp where we have discovered them. At this point, after it's all been explained, he asks Daniel to forgive him for what he has done, and Daniel just instantly, with a smile on his face, is just like, all right. Which is like, okay, Daniel, you're clearly getting over trauma quickly now.
Yeah, I mean, he's just used to this at this point in time.
And now, knowing the truth of the entire matter, Fortress offers the Autobots aid to the prisoners. As far as stories go, Andy, again, I like the way this is building. It's had a fun few twists and turns here, but I actually like this twist in particular because it's not a direction I was expecting.
No, I kind of thought once Daniel got kidnapped that we were going down the like, the prisoners are actually the bad guys here, or not the Decepticon level bad guys, but they're still bad guys, and it's going to be either some kind of uneasy truce, or there's going to be, you know, some kind of moral dilemma of just like, well, we should help these people, but also they tried to kill Daniel, so maybe we should help these people. but no, like, you know, there's a little bit of nuance and kind of backstory that I was not necessarily expecting, and yeah, like it's a pretty solid setup for what is to come.
Meanwhile, still out exploring, the Autobot headmasters come upon a mass grave of prisoners, which is emphasising just how much culling, quite frankly, there has been in this camp.
Yeah, and again, by the way, kids cartoon.
Yep, right, exactly. Graves.
Here we go.
Then Punch arrives on the scene, the narrator noting that he had been spying on the Decepticons, and Punch explains to the headmasters that this massacre was ordered by Galvatron, and that was to prevent the secret of what Scorponok's transector's weaknesses being revealed. The being who knows this secret is named Techna, one of the beast formers who worked on the construction of Scorponok's transector, but who managed to escape the killing, and is currently in hiding in what's described as the South to North Caves.
Yeah, I have it written down as like North-South Caves, and I'm like, my brain kind of melted at that point. I'm like, well, how does that work? Is it North or is it South? Like, you can't call them that.
And a little spoiler, folks, it's basically just a giant crack in the land. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, imagine an earthquake happened, there's a big opening, that's it. So while Hardhead and Brainstorm are returning to Maximus, Chrome Dome and Highbrow head to the caves, which is basically, like I said, just a giant hole in the ground. It's really not much to it. They are searching for Techna. Now, as a quick point of reference here, when it comes to how the episode as a whole progresses, there's lots of like little plot points going on. So for the purposes of recapping, I'm going to try and keep it topic by topic rather than scene by scene. So if things jump around, if you're trying to watch along with the episode to those listening, that's why. So the Autobots soon locate Techna, who is happy to see the Autobots. Techna says, I've been waiting for the day when I can reveal the secret of Scorponok, its weak spot. And Techna is a beast former who basically looks like he'll pose no threat whatsoever. Just a guy wearing a few robes at this point. Literally no danger whatsoever, other than the information that they have. But before he can tell the Autobots what that secret is, he's cut down from behind with a laser blast right through his back, through the front of his chest, by Weird Wolf. Holy crap, Andy, how much violence are we getting in this episode?
Yeah, like I kind of thought this was maybe going to happen, but not within like 2 seconds of his introduction. It's like, hi, I'm here, I know the secret, oh, now I'm dead. And it's like, oh, okay, this moved fast.
With that having happened, Chrome Dome then holds off Weird Wolf's attack while Highbrow takes Tecna back to Battleship Maximus to get urgent medical care. Once this short battle has ended, Chrome Dome gets on his way and starts making his way to the Southern Hemisphere by road. Slash drives there, you know what I mean. Meanwhile, Battleship Maximus we see has now set down in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, earlier in this episode, we kind of got a flashback during the explanation from Curlers to his backstory about, well, of the lavish lifestyle that the elite, if you will, are living. Like, just them just eating grapes, drinking copious amounts of wine, doing nothing. That kind of thing. Exactly what you would expect. We come to see that around the islands, and part of how they've generated so much of their wealth, there's lots of sort of oil fields, I guess is one way to sum it up. And they're kind of like submerged as well. It's quite an elaborate setup, but they've clearly got a lot of money, is the way I'm trying to sum it up, and it ain't going to dry up anytime soon. But then we go inside this big palace, and we see that the elite are drinking with Galvatron. And Galvatron is very happy. He's got a big old glass of Energon. He's having to sit on the floor because, quite frankly, the palace is too small. But he's having a whale of a time. And he also makes it clear to the elite that, look, you aren't going to get attacked because if I'm here, the Autobots won't attack, putting you in danger. It's a win-win. And my price for this is I take all the energy I want. To which the elite are like, sure, go for it. We're fine. So with that having happened, we then see that Scorponok has transformed into base mode. And we just see, it's got to be the most Energon cubes I've ever seen, Andy, just being loaded into Scorponok. It's an insane amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've done pretty well out of this one, it seems.
As Galvatron is now marveling at what he has achieved, he is informed by Soundblaster that Maximus is en route, and sends out Sixshot and the Horrorcons to face the Autobots. As we see Maximus touch down, we see the prisoners inside Curl and his two compatriots, if you will, are begging Fortress to let them get involved with the fighting, but Fortress refuses. At that point, the Decepticons have arrived, each in their jet fighter forms, which is really cool, by the way, and we get a good old-fashioned dogfight-style battle. The train bots take the prisoners to safety elsewhere in the process. We then get a battle between Hardhead and Brainstorm and Sixshot and the Horrorcons. Very much in the air, like I said, a dogfight. It's great action. I really, really enjoyed this battle, Andy.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like both of these episodes, actually, we're covering today have some really good action scenes. Because late on in the next episode, there's also some real good stuff. So these feel like episodes where they kind of cut corners so that they can make these bits look good. Because generally speaking, they're a little bit ropey in places, but then you kind of get to the pivotal moments and it's like, yeah, there feels like there's a lot more care and attention put into these. So, like, fair play to you.
And then Chrome Dome makes his grand entrance by driving up the side of a ravine to launch himself in the air and shoot Sixshot while he is just flying about, as it were. It was a great moment. And Highbrow also at this point joins the fray. Both of now have returned from their respective missions to help their fellow Autobot Headmaster comrades. At this point, the Autobot Headmasters suggest, if I can get my words out, using the Master Shot attack. You know, the thing with the big handgun, if you will. But Hardhead and Brainstorm have now decided to announce to everyone that their energy has been depleted. Which means they can't transform to enable this Master Shot to happen, Andy. What can they do? What can they do, I hear people say. You want to know what they can do? They initiate head formation! Which the narrator describes as, quote-unquote, the power of friendship between Chrome Dome and Highbrow creates a flow of energy to Hardhead and Brainstorm. What that actually means, everyone, is they all hold hands and they get energy.
Yeah, which, I mean, makes you wonder why they need Energon at all. Like, why don't they just hold hands all the time? I guess there's probably a limit to how much you can make, but, you know, still.
I feel like inserting that gag from The Simpsons of Kang and Kodos being, like, the two senators in the US president race. When they're, like, holding hands down the street and it's like, we're just exchanging protein strings. Or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, again, Transformers did it first, as we well
know. There you go. So at this point, now that they've all got their energy and whatnot, Battleship Maximus disconnects its cannon, which, as mentioned before, is a giant pistol. And the Headmasters take control of it, opening fire on the Decepticons. When the weapon is turned on Scorponok, Scorponok transforms into robot mode, and Fortress retaliates by transforming into Fortress Maximus. We get the full-on transformation sequence, opening theme and all, and the fight is on. Albeit briefly. Because as the two Titans are fighting, Galvatron kind of reads the room a little bit, but in a different way for once, because he actually tells Scorponok, hey, stop fighting. Don't use up all that energy we just got. Like, don't risk it, sort of thing.
Yeah, if you had Galvatron telling people to stop fighting on your bingo card, then, man, that's a very particular bingo card, because, yeah, not pretty unusual.
It's like a shiny Pokemon sighting in the game, quite frankly. So, although defeated in battle, the Decepticons have actually been successful. They've got the energy from the planet that they were wanting. So, fair play to them. They technically won, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, again, recurring theme in this series, very much unlike kind of mainstream, you know, the US G1 cartoon where, you know, the Decepticons only ever really won for a bit in two-parters but so that they could go straight back and lose. But yeah, like, they've been on a relative sort of winning streak, you know. It's been draws and wins for them for the most part in this series. Which, when you watch the Fortress's master cannon and realize that it's running the basic programming language, you can probably see why they are maybe beating the Autobots at their own game. But you know, there you go.
But the story isn't finished there, because Fortress says we still have business to tend to, and shortly after we see the Autobots confront the planet's rulers, the Elite, as I've described them, who offer them energy for protecting them. But then Daniel speaks up for the Autobots, for Curl and his crew, and simply shouts at the Elite and just says, "Shut up! We refuse!" And this shout has such a reverberating effect on this, I'll say, portly Elite leader, that he loses his balance and collapses into a small, shallow pool of water behind him. And it's soon made abundantly clear that it will be Curl taking charge of the planet from here on. And this is indicated by Fortress simply pointing off screen, and then us getting a bird's eye view cutaway of the poverty-ridden area with a mild pool of water in the centre of it. And then immediately we're in space. That's how important this plot point is, folks.
Yeah, and again, I feel like if there's one kind of theme that runs throughout this episode, there are kind of a few moments like this where it feels like it has to cut between plot points or story beats a bit quicker than maybe it wants to. Mm. Like, it's tightly edited would be the polite way of saying it, but it definitely feels like this was an episode where they wrote more than they could possibly squeeze into a 20-minute episode. And there are kind of a number of points here where it feels like, we could probably have gone a bit longer on this, but we're straight on to the next thing.
Because the episode isn't over there yet. No, folks, it's still going on. There's more. There's even more. So, we're now inside Battleship Maximus. And Tecna is badly injured. In case you forgot about the Beast Form, everyone, yeah, they're still alive, currently. So, Chrome Dome is trying to gently coax the information, as the TF Wiki put it, out of Tecna about Scorponok. What is the secret? The Beast Former raises a hand, and then he's kind of implying, look at my arm, there's something weird with my arm. And everyone notices, there's something weird with his arm. And then his arm drops, and Daniel catches it. And Daniel, literally, once again, has seen a person die right before his eyes.
I mean, that's probably why he had no hesitation firing that gun earlier. It's just like death means nothing to me anymore. It's like, you know, it's all the same.
But now, what is on the arm? That is the question. And the way it is described is as kind of like a microfilm kind of in the arm of Tecna. And seemingly that will have the data included in it that will reveal what Scorponok's secret is. But it also looks like it's not going to be easy, because they're going to have to decode it. Tecna is given a space burial. Like you've seen in Star Trek, Red Dwarf, name any number of shows you've seen where there's been like a space burial. It's exactly what you expect. And then Highbrow begins work on decoding, but makes it clear it's going to be difficult.
I mean, when everything is running basic, it's going to take you a while to write a program to decode, so...
But this is where, Andy, the subtitles don't help the situation. Because it's at this moment that we find out what the secret is before we're meant to. And it's not even addressed in the next episode either. So I don't know what episode those subtitles were appearing from, but they were way too early. I'm not going to say it out loud, but we do actually know what the actual secret is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe that's what's on the microfilm. It's just the subtitles for a future episode of Headmasters. And it's just like, they're kind of like, aha, this is what Daniel's saying. Isn't it stupid? It both entertained me and was unfortunate, especially because, I mean, it's kind of cool in a sense, because when you know what it is, like, you can see in the actual animation, it becomes clear, because you look and, like, Skorponok is protecting part of his body whenever he gets shot at, and it's like, aha, like, you have a really stupid weak spot, but... It's actually, there is consistency. This is not something that they just made up later on in the series just because, like, oh god, we need to figure out a weak spot now.
And there was actually a little bit during the battle with Fortress Maximus and Skorponok in this where Maximus is trying to just, like he did previously, just like just slash at Skorponok, but Skorponok's shield is just kind of in front of him. And Skorponok has a very prominent line of dialogue, which is something along the lines of, do you really think your sword can break my shield? So it is implied. It, obviously, if you know it, now we know it, you can kind of see the signs of it, which is a fun dynamic.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, yeah. Because it's like you sometimes suspect with these series that they're just making it up as they go along. So it's nice to see a bit of evidence. Like, no, this is actually... You've got all this plotted out. I appreciate this.
And then we conclude the episode with a shot of Fortress Maximus flying through space before we get that wonderful ending theme. So that was the episode, and... Overall, Andy, it was very much a Monster of the Week episode, but it has got relevancy. But I really enjoyed this episode. Just as a standalone episode, it was good fun. There was a lot of good stuff about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's definitely one of those episodes. You couldn't have run this as a two-parter. Like, there's not enough for a two-parter. This would have been a great, like, one-and-a-half episode series where just a little bit more time to flesh out some of the edges of some of the stuff that they clearly, it felt like they'd written and just, you know, had to drop onto the cutting room floor because you suddenly quickly transition to something else. But yeah, like all of the plot points are good. You know, the whole Skorponok bit obviously sets things up nicely for the future. And you know, all the politics of this planet are just kind of interesting. Like, you know, there's nothing particularly groundbreaking, but there is a through line and some thought to it. They're not just like, oh yeah, I don't know, just random alien planet, here you go. You know, there's a bit of narrative chops to it. So yeah, I definitely appreciated that. So yeah, it was a really good one, to be honest.
And from there, we advance to the TF Wiki to see if there are any interesting notes, as it were, or trivia bits that may help piece together some things. Perhaps some things we're not meant to know yet, but now we do. Continuity notes. Enslaved Beast Formers were shown working on Skorponok's transector back in the Shadow Emperor Zarak episode. I'm trying to make sure I say it correctly because of the whole Skorponok-Zarak name difference. Tecna is a generic Beast Former, not based on any figure from the toy line, but similar dog-based Beast Formers appeared in the episode Rebellion on Planet Beast. Mm-hmm. So the power-up ability that I mentioned... That is also used in the previous episode. It was used by three of them specifically, but now this is the first time that all four headmasters are involved, and they connect on their own transectors rather than swapping between each other as with Cross head-on. This process is given the name Head Formation and will be an important power for the remainder of the series and a particular moment near the close of the series. So look forward to that, everybody. Continuity errors. How would Daniel's light gun, essentially just a Nez zapper, be able to hit the ball, let alone injure Wheelie's arm, when it's a light gun?
I mean, what are, like, lasers if not really strong light guns? Is my rebuttal to that.
Very deep, Andy, the way you said that. Fortress seems oddly keen on a regime change for a planet he's never been to before, based on the word of one guy who was holding a child hostage at knife point mere minutes earlier.
I mean, there is, yeah, there is a lot taken at face value there. That is certainly true.
Trivia notes. This episode originally aired in Japan as part of a triple bill alongside Battle for Defense of the False Planet and Head Formation of Friendship on December the 18th. I'll add the year in here. It's 1987. There you go.
No, that's fair. So, yeah, get your light gun game in time for Christmas.
There you go, you see? There you go. The Region 2 release of this episode suffers from a subtitling glitch. Oh, good, we get to acknowledge this in proper trivia form. In which, on a few occasions throughout the episode, subtitles from another episode appear on screen. Painfully, the subtitles are from the episode, I Risk My Life for Earth. In the episode in which Scorponok's weak spot is revealed. And on one of the subs, which appears, it has... basically, one of the subs has that very revelation revealed. So we now know what episode that is from. I'm going to quickly see vaguely where that is. It was I Risk My Life for Earth. It's roughly episode 26 by the look of it. So we're not too far away from it. But either way, wait, no, episode 26, that was episode 21.
Yeah, so... yeah.
So that's a bit of a difference right there.
It is, yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder whether that's how they made the mess up, because they were so busy thinking about Scorponok's weak spot that they somehow ended up in the wrong place.
The Region 4 DVD release of this episode, i.e. Australia and New Zealand, despite being released 2 years after the UK DVD set that we're referring to, still contains the same subtitle errors.
Yeah, clearly, yeah, not much effort put into such things.
This episode is one of the very few times in any Transformers media where Decepticons are shown killing humans.
Yeah. One of the other times is going to be next episode, but... anyway.
Foreign localization. Not too much to say here, to be quite frank, Andy. The Omni Productions dub name was simply Scorponok's Weakness. Shout Factory subtitle name was Find Scorponok's Weak Spot. In Italian, it was The Secret of Lord Zarak, which, yeah, sure, yeah, technically technically correct.
Yeah, bit more vague, and can appreciate that.
And then in Mandarin, I kind of like this one, it translates as Expose Scorponok's Weak Spot.
Yeah, no, that's pretty good.
Which, again, technically didn't happen, but it just did for us by QC error. So there we go, buddy. That concludes that particular episode. Any additional notes that you've got that you want to make notes of? Any random things I may not have touched on at all? Anything else at all before we move on to episode 22?
No. I think let's move straight on.
Okay, then. Well, with that being said, let's delve into episode 22, Head Formation of Friendship. I'll try and say it like that each time. We begin with the Autobots aboard Battleship Maximus, who are still lagging behind in their pursuit of the Decepticons and their planet-hopping energy raids. Chromedome immediately sets the tone for the episode by saying, I'm so bored! How long do we get to keep up with surveillance? And Hardhead just responds with going, we have no idea when the Decepticons are going to show up. We'll just have to keep looking. Then an alarm goes off. But this time... for once, Andy, it's not an SOS or an impending attack. It's actually because their attack systems have got something wrong with them. Some kind of glitch or repair job needed, if you will. The Restless Chromedome and Hardhead decide to occupy their time, and I say decide as in they're told to go and do it, by venturing out onto the ship's hull to repair the fault. Now, considering as well, Andy, it's been well established that the Headmasters can fly in space. They decide to shimmy along the side of the ship, like we're watching an episode of Red Dwarf from the 1980s, as it were. And Chromedome nearly falls off, and it's just like, I don't understand.
Yeah, there was I definitely had that same moment of just like, who cares? Like, not in a, like, I wish ill on Chromedome, just like, you can just fly back to the ship. I like, I don't know, maybe their energy levels were low or something. I'm sure you could write some good reason for it. But yeah, it did seem a bit weird. It's like you've literally been flying around the galaxy for God knows how long. So I think you'll be fine out there.
They hadn't done their Head Formation of Friendship yet, you know?
Exactly.
But that aside, They find that the problem that has been flagged is actually far greater than first thought and are unable to fix it themselves. Continuing the story from the end of the previous episode, we see that Highbrow has still not been able to actually decode that information yet. So Chrome Dome and Hardhead can't call on him to lend his technical expertise.
Although I will say, like, from the screens that he's looking at, it looks like he's just reading some poetry and stuff. Like, I feel like he's just, like, browsing the internet. It's like, no, decoding this is really hard. While he's just, like, reading some, I don't know, reading TF Wiki or something.
An irritated Chrome Dome does what most people do when technology isn't working. Take out their frustration on it by just hitting it. He punches a pipe or similar looking thing, and that jars loose a few screws and components, which just drift off the side of the ship and float into space.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if anyone's ever seen the film Gravity, but I just had visions of just like, this is how it starts. It's just like, oh no, like Chrome Dome's just like obliterated like a bunch of astronauts and spaceships, etc. Also the start of Planetes, if we want an anime reference.
Yeah, there you go. You know,
space debris is dangerous. Don't just let screws fall off of your spaceship. You know, yeah. supposedly like, you know, the good guys, like, no, don't do that.
Well, look, Chrome Dome adds to that, to your musings there, Andy, by simply responding by going, oh, that doesn't look too good.
Yeah. I mean, also, I mean, you'd like to think, again, as mentioned, like, Autobot incompetence, like, an ongoing theme in this series. I mean, you'd like to think that they have spares for stuff like that. That, you know, they just have, like, a toolbox that has a bunch of screws from other flat pack furniture that'll probably fit and it'll be fine, because, you know, that's usually how this goes.
I expect they probably just got like part of their cargo bay that's just dedicated to loose nuts and bolts.
Yeah, just a bunch of spare Metroplex eyes in case they get stolen again. All sorts in there.
Meanwhile, we see that the Decepticons have landed on the harmonious Planet Paradise. And that they're basically just wrecking the local landscape, with Scorponok flying down through trees, just attacking the locals, and they're about to begin draining the planet for its natural energy sources. Surprise, surprise. Galvatron, in response to everything he's seeing, says, ah, look at how frightened the humans are. Sixshot responds with, it'll be easy to take their energy. And Galvatron says, exactly, my plans are to wipe out the humans and take over the planet. In a later scene, we see that Galvatron is actually surprised by just how much energy that this planet has for them to plunder. He's very happy.
Indeed, yeah. It's a nice little kind of name to it. Like, aha, yes, this really is a, like, paradise planet. on which note, like, I'm glad we finally come to a paradise planet, because I feel like that's, like, a staple of any spacefaring series. You have to visit the paradise planet at some point and be like, oh, this is perfect. So kudos Transformers for finally getting us there.
Back with the Autobots, we find out that they have subsequently been able to pinpoint the Decepticons' location. Fortress notes that the planet is where humans and animals live in harmony. Bit late, Fortress, they're not currently. But with Battleship Maximus unable to proceed there until Chrome Dome's repairs are done, Fortress gives Highbrow a reprieve from his code breaking, which is once again, through dialogue, made very clear. It ain't getting too far. There's a lot of work to do. But he sends him on an advanced scouting mission along with Twincast aboard the train bots. Fortress says to Highbrow just before they go, which I'm not sure if this is a translation error, Andy, but I felt the need to bring it up for potential discussion. He says to Highbrow, listen, I want to avoid conflict with the Decepticons down on the planet, right? he's asking a question, and I'm just thinking, what do you mean, Fortress?
What are you insinuating here?
Also worth noting that Chrome Dome and Hardhead have at this point just left the repair job because they've noticed people are going away to do something, and they're trying to make their case to go on the mission. And Chrome Dome's big sales pitch for why he should be going on this mission is, quote unquote, what if Highbrow's alone and something happens? But in Fortress, as polite as possible, essentially says, stop slacking and finish the repairs. I love this having to take care of children style, like, very old Optimus Prime reminiscent thing from Fortress once again.
Yeah, yeah, no, he does, he for all of my criticism sometimes of Fortress, he does some good work in this one in terms of being like, oh, well, you know, if you can't fix it, guess we'll just have to leave it behind. It's like, all right, I'll get it done.
As they fly over the planet's jungle, that being the train bots, they are approached by Paprika, a native girl who is riding on a giant bird, who immediately assumes that the Autobots are the Decepticons, based on everything that's happened to her village and stuff already. Highbrow convinces her that they are in fact the Decepticons' enemies, and learns from her that half of her village was basically just sacrificed so quickly there was nothing they could do, and it was just an awful situation. She also says that the villains are currently based by a sheer cliff. As far as descriptors go, Andy, for where somewhere is, it's like, can you narrow it down just a little bit for me?
Pretty vague. But also a very useful place to fight Decepticons, I guess, on top of a sheer cliff. Hmm.
That said, I do also want to call attention to the fact that the visual as this conversation is going on from outside the train bots of this giant bird just sitting on top of the train bots, I laughed so hard.
Oh yeah, it's great. Like, that whole thing is really good. No. I will say, like, as another, like, point of note for this episode, really nice just to have a whole bunch of time with one of the headmasters just in their, like, head mode without the big robot man. Like, I want to call him Galt for this entire time because that's what he's called in the other general G1 continuity, but just to have, like, head in robot mode rather than entirety of Highbrow. I'm surprised they haven't done more of that this season, especially when you've had, like, other sort of, like, human or humanoid characters for them to interact with. But it's pretty rare. Like, I feel like this is the longest anyone's been in this form in the entire series.
Yeah, I want to say maybe Chrome Dome was for a little bit at one point, but I don't remember the exact
Yeah,
context.
There was in one of the earlier episodes. But even then, that was kind of, I feel like that was more like a necessity. Like, I think something had happened to his actual body or something at that point. Whereas this was very much just a kind of, I guess, like a good choice of stealth. Like, and it, rather than send Jetfire in to do the stealth bit, as we've had in Transformers in the past, it's like, no, just send the smallest guy possible. Just, like, leave your body somewhere safe and just go in your head mode, in robot mode.
There's a quick report back to Fortress via a video call, and this is when one of the other random plot points of the episode makes itself known, because we see that Daniel is taken aback, taken aghast, whatever you want to say. He's smitten for Paprika.
Mm-hmm. Like father, like son.
You aren't wrong, actually. So this leads to the following conversation between Wheelie and Daniel. Wheelie says, it must be that girl. Daniel responds with, no, I just haven't seen human face for so long. I see. I guess you miss human contact. Hang on, is my face no good then? Says Wheelie. Daniel just sticks his tongue out and just goes, bleh. And Wheelie responds with, you don't have to react like that. Acting as though he's hurt. And then Daniel has to go, oh, I was only joking. And then runs away laughing. And at that point, I'm just thinking, this child. What will this child grow up to be?
Yeah, I mean, well, we closely followed, like, Spike's kind of journey through adolescence and beyond. So I feel like this episode gives us a pointer as to what at least some of that is going to be like.
With that conversation out of the way, thank God, we hear from Chrome Dome that the repair is going to take more time because of the quote unquote difficult spot it is in.
Very technical term.
Exactly right. Fortress then tries to egg him on a bit by saying, ah, you know, we're going to leave for the planet shortly. And Chrome Dome's like, I'll try and work faster. Back on the planet. Highbrow is now in sort of investigating things solo, having been taken to the location by Paprika. He sends her away to use the train bots to get the rest of her villagers to safety. And we also hear that Twincast and his cassettes are also doing their own form of patrols as well. Highbrow climbs up to the top of a mountain and can see a bunch of Energon cubes just unattended. And he's just thinking, it's really quiet here. Where is everyone? And despite the fact he just said it's really quiet, he jumps down and lands with an almighty crash. So heck knows how no one didn't hear him. And then it turns out it was a trap, because this is when Mindwipe appears and starts throwing one of his minds. What's the word I'm looking for? Mindwipe? A mind spell?
Hypnosis.
Thank you. Hypnosis. He starts throwing that towards Highbrow and starts saying, you'll be blind as a bat during battle. You'll be blind as a bat during battle. You'll be blind as a bat during battle. Actually, a really good tongue twister there. I thought about it, so I'm going to try that again in the future. And Highbrow is trying to think of a way to get away from this, Andy. He's in great pain. And ultimately, he does the one thing that, based on his reaction, Mindwipe thought no one could ever do. He transforms and starts flying away.
Yeah, yeah. It's who could have foreseen this?
And Mindwipe's reaction was essentially, wait, you can't do that! And then he just takes out a gun and just starts shooting down on him and whatnot. But then it becomes a 3-on-1 fight against Highbrow. Suffice to say, he is captured. But Steeljaw notices what happens, but also realizes he's not strong enough to help Highbrow, and instead goes to report to Twincast so they can all offer some assistance. Back at Paprika's village, Battleship Maximus has now touched down. And the Autobots have now met the natives, led by Paprika's father, Polonus. And this is when we get round 2 of Daniel, and now Wheelie, being smitten with Paprika. As Daniel shakes Paprika's hand, he starts blushing. And then Wheelie immediately feels jealous and is like, I'm Wheelie. Also wants to shake her hand. And when he does, his eyes turn heart red.
Yeah, I mean, I find that kind of menacing, like, because that made me think, like, whenever, like, a Transformer's eyes go red, that normally means they're about to go berserk and attack people, like, there's some Dark Brandon energy going on with him, and it's like, this is a strange, you know, because Transformers can blush, right? We know this, we have seen Transformers blush, so why is Wheelie not blushing? Why is he going, like, nightmare eyes red? Like, I don't know, it seems strange.
Maybe, or maybe all of his blush mechanics are just in his eyes.
I mean, yeah, it might be some malfunction, I suppose.
I mean, it's Wheelie, you know.
Yeah, it's like when you get a car and, like, you know, they've wired the brake lights and the reverse lights on the wrong way around. And so, you know, it's like that, but Transformers, I guess.
So to try and emphasize, you know, how cool they are and, like, the differences between Earth, Athenia, and this planet we're on now, Planet Paradise, they start kind of talking about things that are really cool, and Paprika is teaching Daniel how to fish with just his bare hands, and then tries to trump Wheelie tries to put over the fact, I should say, that, you know, I can transform, that's really cool. And then Paprika says, I can do this, whistles in the air, summons the giant bird, goes flying around a bit, does another whistle, jumps from the giant bird, lands on a really fast deer, and just says, I can do that. To which Wheelie's response is just, well, I think transforming's cooler, but all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange turn of phrase of affairs for a series that is trying to sell Transformers toys to kids. Because suddenly everybody's like, well, I just want the Paprika toy that has a giant bird and a giant deer that goes really fast. Like, I don't want these robots anymore. The robots suck.
As this is happening, Twincast arrives on the scene and reports of Highbrow's capture. But then the village is attacked. Sixshot is about and is just launching an onslaught of laser fire on the village, setting the surrounding jungle on fire. This is when we get a really, really, really random moment, Andy. And I was genuinely confused until I actually had to look it up on the TF Wiki to make sure I wasn't losing my mind. We suddenly get a Transformer I don't recognize, who is just trying to breathe fire, but is saying we need to try and breathe water. And I'm just like, I swear I recognize you. Where have I seen you before? And I looked it up. And it's Double Cross. It's an Autobot, not a Decepticon, mind you, because I thought it was like the Decepticon equivalent, but it's not. It's Double Cross of the Monsterbots, who we last saw earlier in the series being left to guard Planet Beast. Why are they here now? I don't know. They're just here.
Time to sell some more toys. It's like, guys, you've not used this toy in forever. The cells are down. Like, you need to find a way to get him off Planet Beast. His shift is over.
You could just imagine the scene at HQ just being like, you know, these toys sold really well for a couple of weeks after that episode, but sales have really gone down. Can anyone figure out why? And the writer's just like, no.
Yeah, and this is one of those episodes where kind of the whole fight scene that ensues is very much a like, hey, let's sell some of the cool toys again. Because, yeah, for a series that has been very headmaster-focused for a good few weeks now, it suddenly are just like, yeah, but don't forget these toys, kids. They're also really cool. Like, admittedly, they don't have a giant bird, but hey, they're really cool. Look, they're cool.
I mean, look, like we said, it's close to Christmas, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So Battleship Maximus is not taking off because it's actually blocking the flames and safeguarding the natives, therefore is unable to move, leaving the three headmasters that are still lurking about to go out alone to try to rescue Highbrow. In terms of other people that are lurking about, despite being told to get to safety, Daniel, Wheelie and Paprika are sort of going through some cliffs trying to like find the other villagers. But then Paprika summons the giant bird and flies away. Seemingly, one would assume, to go and help Highbrow, because she feels a little bit guilty over what's happened. But Daniel and Wheelie are just left on the ground, basically going, Where are you going? don't go! Don't leave! Please!
Yeah. Won't transform into your cool car mode, Wheelie. See well, that'll get you.
Highbrow, meanwhile, it turns out, has been bound, like, ball and chain type deal, like, beneath a waterfall, effectively. It's actually a really cool setting. But you are kind of wondering, can he not just, you know, break the chains? Like, why can't he just rip them out the ground? That'll become clear later. Now, at this point, we see the Autobot headmaster trying to get close to the location where Highbrow is. They are met randomly by Ratbat, who plays a recording from Galvatron, basically saying, stay the heck away or you lose your friend. But of course, being themselves, they aren't going to take that lying down, and Twincast tells them the exact location of where to find Highbrow. But then, there's another wrinkle in all of this. Paprika. She arrives and channels what I've written down, Andy, as the spirit of Carly from Season 2. Because she decides, with a hand knife in hand, quite literally, she is going to dive into the pool of water to try and help Highbrow. And I immediately thought, can this person stay? They're a great character. At this moment, Autobot reinforcements arrive in the form of all three monster bots, Double Cross, Grotesque, and Repugnus, which I forgot how much I love that name. Also, the Technobots and the Trainbots show up too. Like you alluded to, Andy, it's kind of combiner fight time. We've got a couple of the combiners on the Decepticon side as well. And even under cover of the ensuing battle, neither Paprika's hand knife, or just Hardhead's hands for that matter, can break the chains that are holding Highbrow down. And this is when, at that very moment, we have to engage in head formation. I can't even say it properly. My voice cracked. I'm going to leave that in the edit. Doesn't matter. They engage in head formation to try and boost the energy of their comrade. And the narrator says, behold the headmaster's technique for recharging their energy. And then they give Highbrow the strength to break his bonds. Flame blasts from the monster bots are just igniting the energon cubes all around. Like, the stockpiles are just useless now. All that energon they collected, gone. Wasted.
Yeah. This is some more classic Transformers that we're used to here. Like, we've collected all the energon, then it all just gets blown up. It's like, yes, this is what we come here for every week.
And Galvatron can read the room once again. He realizes what's happening. And then says the following to his Decepticon comrades. You lot, retreat. Great line of retreat there. Loved it.
Yeah. And again, yeah, another classic Transformers moment that we come for every week is.
But now the question is, where is Scorponok in all of this? Well, it turns out, hiding under the waterfall, which actually explains the reason that Highbrow couldn't break his bonds, because he was attached to Scorponok. So actually, Andy, I applaud that decision. That was a nice little surprise. So much so, even Chromedome went, wait, why is Scorponok there?
Yeah, I mean, there is... I mean, I still have questions as to why Scorponok is there as well, but, you know, it's... Sure, I'm sure that makes sense somewhere along the line.
The episode now closes with the Autobots saying their goodbyes to the locals as a slow, melancholic version on piano of the opening theme plays in the background. Paprika says they will rebuild their village to be the best, which leads Daniel and Wheelie to start arguing over whether Earth or Athenia is better, leading to RC to basically try and imply, shut up, guys, by saying, all planets are beautiful, as long as people live in peace and harmony.
I mean, RC's visited Char. Like, she can't say the planets are beautiful. But also, yeah, like, I'd be like, way to impress the ladies, Daniel, just by arguing over what the best planet is. Like, I bet she was really taken in by that.
It's like kids arguing over the best Transformer, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
At this point, Highbrow thanks Paprika for everything, and they head off in pursuit of their enemies once again. The narrator says, as the episode is drawing to a close, the beautiful paradise planet has been saved. However, what will Galvatron's next target be? Once again, the Autobots continue their pursuit of the Decepticons. And that was the end of the episode. And again, Andy, perfectly fine. I enjoyed it. Like you mentioned earlier, the slightly more character-centric focused episode, I liked it. I got a kick out of it. We haven't seen too much of Highbrow, and there was a lot unique about this that made it fun to watch. And also, like you said, it had a lot of harkenings back to older school G1, like American style G1, if you will. And it was really fun watching this. It was just a perfectly watchable episode, and I have zero qualms with it.
Yeah, it's kind of refreshing. Like, again, you know, it wasn't backwards in, you know, showing kind of the Decepticons at their worst, of just like blowing a bunch of people up. And yeah, it's like, you know, Paprika was a good character to have. Like you say, it's definitely one of those characters in the annals of like, oh man, can we get them to be a regular, because they're actually pretty good. And you know, I think all of that stuff really helps, because yeah, you sort of, you strip that kind of stuff away and like, this is a pretty average bog standard episode, but it had just enough kind of little charm points and interesting little peccadillos to it to be to elevate it a little bit and kind of make it at least a fun episode, if not a mildly interesting one.
So now we venture to the TF Wiki to see if there are any other interesting trivia notes that we should be aware of, or perhaps we'll clarify a few things, because there are a few little anomalies in this episode, to say the least. Continuity notes. Oh, in fact, Andy, we're going to touch on one right away. The Monster Bots were last seen in the episode Rebellion on Planet Beast, where they were left to guard the titular world. They have obviously since been called away from the duty. Notably, the Transformers revisited Planet Beast in the manga named The Decisive Battle of Planet Beast, which was not definitively chronologically placed. That's a phrase. And could easily have occurred during the current planet hopping arc. Hence, perhaps, the Monster Bots joining up with Battleship Maximus, the Battleship Maximus crew, after that story. So that's a plausible thing.
Yeah. Or maybe the Battle Beasts are just extinct now, so they had nothing left to do. also a possibility.
And of course, as we talked about in the previous episode, the Headmaster's power-up ability, the Head Formation, was introduced in episode 21. Trivia notes. This episode originally aired in Japan as part of a triple bill alongside Battle for Defense of the False Planet and Find Scorponok's Weak Spot on December the 18th, 1987. So, bit of a note here. I'll read this and we'll see where it goes. English text appearing on Highbrow's screen as he tries to decode the microfilm includes Tetsuo, who was leading the group, suddenly puts on his brakes. That's an Akira reference if I ever heard one.
So, yeah. I had more time, I was hoping to like freeze frame and actually see what the text was. And I'm very happy to hear that it's something from Akira, because that's kind of amazing.
Also, a white figure suddenly appears on a street where there had been nothing a moment ago. And the figure, glowing in the light, came closer and closer. It had 26 numbers written on his palm. A... dot dot dot. Which all appear to be references to Katsuhiro Otomo's Akira.
No, I love it. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it, right? I mean, animated in Japan, they probably wanted something like, well, we can't just put Japanese text on, so find something English, and bang, there you go. Someone pulled something out from Akira.
That's pretty cool. In hindsight, I didn't actually even think to look at the screen that much. I don't know why, but I kind of wish I had now.
Yeah, I mean, especially having seen like the basic code the episode before, I was very determined to see what was on there, but it was not high fidelity enough for me to be able to do it without freeze framing, and I didn't get around to it. So I'm glad that I know now, because that was like bugging me at the back of my mind. It's like, I wonder what that actually was.
And also, as you noted, when Wheelie shakes Paprika's hand, he appears to blush through his eyes.
Very strange.
Foreign localization. Again, not too many notes on this. Omni Productions dub. Okay. The Friendship of the Four Headmasters was the title.
I mean, yeah, also works.
Shout Factory subtitle, same as what we have. Head formation of friendship. In Italian. Actually, no, I'm going to come back to Italian. Hang on. In Mandarin, we've got head formation of friendship. And in Italian, we have simply got, Andy, Headmasters, United We Stand.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the name of their second album or something, not an episode title, but I kind of like it.
And that wraps up the notes for those episodes, basically. Andy, any other additional notes you've got regarding episode 22? Anything else that we missed? Did you notice any other Akira references, perhaps?
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess that one of the Protector Bots is a bike. They could do the Akira bike slide thing at some point.
There you go.
So, like, fingers crossed that happens. But no, like a couple of good solid episodes. I've had a good time with these, especially because I feel like we're on a bit of a downer after the last couple of episodes of like, they were kind of all right. But these are like pepped me up a little bit of like, no, these were quite fun.
Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder, because I know it's been implied in some of the TF Wiki notes that at some point soon we're going to be building up to like the next arc, and this happens for like a little bit to lead into it. We've had a few teasers of things already, like with Scorpodok kind of implying, just bide your time, Headmasters, we'll have our moment to strike.
Yeah,
so something is brewing.
Yeah, and now we have the Scorpionox weakness countdown timer has started, you know. That's clearly going to be, you know, a big part of things to come. Spoilers, the weakness is not that he's a bit ticklish, so it is actually kind of important fundamental stuff.
And in terms of countdown to when we're next going to be doing a podcast, folks, all going well, it should be available in a few weeks' time from when we have published this, but please allow us another week or two, because this time of year is busy from a work perspective. That's just the easy way to sum it up. So if we're a little bit delayed, have no fear. But we will be talking about episodes 23 and 24 of Transformers Headmasters, which you'll be happy to hear, Andy, or perhaps not, have the following episode titles. Episode 23, Mystery of the Space Pirate Ship.
I do like a good space pirate, so.
And episode 24, Andy, I'm just going to read it verbatim. Ultra Magnus dies.
Finally.
Spoiler?
I don't know, maybe we'll accidentally have subtitles from the episode where he comes back to life or something that will spoil the whole thing. So who can say what will happen on this roller coaster upon which we reside.
I wasn't expecting that, so when I loaded up the thing to have a look at what it was, that's the way I do it, folks. I sort of don't look ahead. I didn't know it was gonna say that, so that caught me completely off guard.
Yeah, it is a very, I mean, it's not unique to Japan, but Japan does love a good literal episode title that just tells you what happens. And it never ceases to astound me when they do stuff like that. It's just like, yeah, main character dies. It's like, look forward to that next week.
Yeah, and sometimes when that may happen, especially in the context of anime, it might be because, you know, the manga's already been published. So it's, in theory, there's already a decent chunk of an audience of the franchise that already knows that happens. So they kind of lean into it a bit. But
yeah.
But yeah, that's incredibly direct. And I also, it's got two exclamation marks after the word dies.
I mean, that's absolutely fair. That's bare minimum, I would say. but like, yeah, I mean, it is a good way of getting people to watch the thing. I mean, if had they called it like Transformers the Movie : Optimus Prime Dies, they would probably have like done a lot more box office, because everyone would be like, what? Okay, well, I'm going to go see that like day one to find out what the hell happens. So, you know, there is something to be said for kind of giving the game away, because then you want to know how and why. And so on and so forth, but
and that's what we think now, is it? Like, how and why? What happened?
Yeah.
I mean, in theory, it would imply we're going to be back on Earth, because isn't that where Magnus is based?
Yes, I think he's on Earth currently, not Athenia. Mm. I don't know. I lose track of who is where.
Or is he on Athenia? I'm trying to remember.
Mm. And I mean, again, let's not forget, like, Ultra Magnus has been blown up a bunch of times as well. So, you know,
in the movie!
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Junkions can just put him back together again. So, you know, it may not be such a big deal as we're making it out to be.
Actually, I know we're going with this remote for a minute or two, but that's actually just occurred to me. No, the movie hasn't happened in this continuity.
Yeah, that, exactly.
Which also, does that mean then that the Junkions don't exist?
Yeah, or I mean, they maybe exist but have never been
been found
in contact with the Transformers. They're probably watching Headmasters on TV, like that's very meta.
Actually, you're not wrong, actually, now you mentioned it.
They're probably like, God, we hope Daniel doesn't come to our planet.
but there we go, folks. So thank you very much for listening and or watching this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, why not tell a friend about the podcast? We would really appreciate it. Once again, you can find our Instagram and Twitter handles at StarScreamsPod. If you've been watching on YouTube, or you want to find the YouTube version, I should say, if you search for StarScreams Ghost Podcast, you should find us just fine. Of which I will add that sort of in the intervening time, when there's going to be sort of downtime between episodes and whatnot, I'm sort of currently trying to put together some clips from our massive podcast run of just specific topics and stuff. So if you see the odd video popping up, or I might even also put them up as just like a little audio extra for the podcast feed, should people just want to delve in and out, as it were, don't be surprised if you see those pop up. But if you enjoyed them, why not hit a like on them? We'd really, really appreciate it. Good sir, before we wrap up fully for today, any other business from you?
No, I'm going to say I'm starting to feel kind of bad that I'm making fun of Daniel so much, but I can't stop at this point, so, you know, I'm just gonna run with it.
I mean, honestly, I mean, what are we at now? We could be episode 23, and there's a heck of a lot more episodes in this show. At this point, I'm almost wondering, is there going to be like a time skip and Daniel's going to become an adult? Because we've got to get to episode 38.
I've got to admit, I would really like to see, like we did with Spike, that kind of, like, bounce from, I mean, it was more kind of like teenager to adult for him, I guess. But it would be fun to see some time skips and see what becomes of Daniel, especially given everything he's been through.
Yeah, I mean, I was about to perhaps mention something like, will he appear in, like, the next series after Headmasters? But I have no idea. I'm not going to think that far ahead yet, because that might break me, my brain.
Yeah, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
There you go. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening and or watching. From myself, Jeremy Graves, from him, Mr. Andy Hanley, we've been Starscream's Ghost, a Transformers podcast. Until next time, take care and speak to you soon.
Head formation of friendship.
That's got to be our new call sign to end this now.
Oh, no.